Hello, everyone. My name is Jasmohan Bajaj. I'm one of the co-editors-in-chief of the American Journal of Gastroenterology. And along with my co-editor-in-chief, Dr. Millie Long, we are delighted to have Dr. David Rubin, who's the lead author of the recent American College of Gastroenterology Ulcerative Colitis Guideline Update that is now published in the American Journal of Gastroenterology. Welcome, Dr. Rubin.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Bajaj. It's really a pleasure.
So the questions for our patients: what determines remission? Is it symptoms, colonoscopy, biopsy, or a combination of all of them?
It's a really important question, and it's one of the main points of discussion in the new guidelines. Remission, which is what we want all of our patients to achieve and all patients should expect to achieve, is defined first by symptom improvement and the absence of symptoms of active colitis. And that means normalized stool frequency. So that means formed stool that is controlled in one or two a day. It means the absence of any rectal bleeding. And it means the absence of urgency, or that rush to get to the bathroom without being able to predict when you're going to go. And then secondly, remission is defined by what we call deep remission, which means that if you look with a scope, or you draw blood tests, or you look at a stool marker, or increasingly, if we use an intestinal ultrasound measure, that everything from an inflammatory point of view is under control. The reason this one is important is because, believe it or not, many people have improvement of their symptoms or even absence of symptoms, but if they're still inflamed, which can happen, they're going to have a relapse. And we're trying to make people feel perfect, and we want it to last forever. And the way to get it to last is to make sure that we have modified the disease process by turning off the inflammation. Unfortunately, we have a lot of therapies that are now doing that very effectively.
Speaking of that, they've been deluging. There's a huge number of ads for multiple therapies for ulcerative colitis and inflammatory bowel disease. How would you and with the patient make the decision of which therapy to start at what point?
Well, the good news for patients is to know that we've made tremendous progress in understanding how to treat this disease more effectively. Of course, we're still working on understanding the cause and developing cures. We haven't given up on that. But in the meantime, we've made a lot of progress in identifying different ways to target the overactive immune system and to modify that response. And it's important for people to know that targeting the overactive immune system does not mean immunosuppressing people. We have a whole bunch of therapies now that are selective in where they work and how they work that are not associated with immunosuppression. So unfortunately, there's some misperceptions about all this. And I do think that actually the direct-to-consumer advertising ends up confusing people in some ways when they list all the rare side effects. The reality, however, is that we have a lot of treatments, and discussing with your doctor or your advanced practice nurse which treatments are right for you includes such things as: how active is your disease? What is your risk for complications like needing to be in the hospital or have surgery? What other extra intestinal problems might you have, like joint pain or skin inflammation? And choosing therapies based on these different features is key. And then we get into things that I think are a sign we've really made progress, like convenience. Would you rather have your therapy as a daily pill or an injection that you do every 8 weeks? And in the future, maybe even less often. What would you like that would work best for your lifestyle, for your job, for your responsibilities, for raising a family? And we talk about all of those decisions. Unfortunately, we also talk about whether your insurance company will let us give you the therapy that we want. But I will tell you that in the new guidelines from the American College of Gastroenterology, we have specifically called out the insurance companies and said that they should stay out of these decisions and that we do not support them requiring step therapy or patients to quote unquote fail other options before they can get to the ones we need. So they should know that the ACG is on their side. We're working together with our colleagues to make sure that whatever options we're choosing are available to you, and that decision should be between you and your healthcare team and nobody else.
So thank you. So building upon this, how often should the efficacy of the drugs be tested, and if the patient develops antibodies against one, would that make them ineligible for other kind?
It's a really important question. And I want to emphasize that our goal is that somebody should be stable on their therapy until we make the decision that something better has come along. But unfortunately, we do know that many patients lose response over time to a treatment. So the first thing for people to know is that although we understand this can happen, we don't want it to, and they should notify their healthcare team if they're starting to have breakthrough symptoms. The second is for us to figure out why it's happening. Are they taking the therapy as prescribed? Are they able to get it as prescribed? And are they breaking through in between doses, or do they actually have complete loss of response? And that's important for us to understand. Is the treatment working but needs a dose adjustment? Or is the treatment stopped working completely and we need a completely different mechanism? Fortunately, we have lots of new mechanisms to consider. For the treatments that target TNF, which are old-fashioned drugs like infliximab and adalimumab, you may know the brands of Remicade or Inflectra or Zimfentra and Humira. Those drugs, we can actually measure drug levels and understand what might be happening at a deeper level. The newer drugs don't need that and don't have that with the same level of evidence. So we end up making decisions based on how they're doing and what we know about the therapies otherwise. But the message for patients is you should be stable. And if you're not having stable control, please let your doctor and your nurses know so they can work on this with you.
Thank you. Often we get asked, is there a role for probiotics in conjunction with medications in ulcerative colitis?
In the guidelines, we go very specifically into this. And the bottom line for patients to understand is while probiotics sound like a good idea, the evidence to support them is negative, meaning they don't work. They don't work for induction of remission. They don't work for maintenance of remission. And partially that isn't because it's not a good idea to consider. It's because we've learned that what you take orally in the form of all these different probiotic formulations, despite the claims that they have in that unregulated component of medical treatments, they do not change the microbiome in a sustainable way. Forgive the expression, but it's like spitting in the ocean. And so we encourage people to not spend their money on those therapies because they have not managed to control ulcerative colitis. And unfortunately, they have similarly not worked in Crohn's disease.
So thank you so much, Dr. Rubin, for answering our questions. And again, these guidelines are available in the American Journal of Gastroenterology. Thank you again.
My pleasure.